You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
We have heard this all the time. 81% of white evangelicals voted for Donald Trump, but you heard that 40% of white evangelicals didn't vote in 2016. We hear the nuns are soaring. That's true. But what about the percentage of Americans who are claiming to be born again? And are most American Latinos Catholic? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to be talking about media coverage of some religious and political trends. They often overlap here in America. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with the Latino question. Are most American Latinos Roman Catholic?
Well, I think if you walked up on the street and asked Americans that question, they would all state, you know, that overwhelmingly that the assumption that these are all Roman Catholics, or that immigrants coming in were all Catholics, or that second generation, third generation Latinos in America would still be Roman Catholics, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's an interesting study that came out the other day that said, you know, for the first time, that number, Catholic percentage of the Latino population of America slipped under 50 and is now 47%. I mean, these are Pew Forum numbers, as always. We spend so much time discussing things that come out of the Pew Research Center in Washington, D.C. But stop and think of the implications of that. I mean, I could sit here and come up with four or five page one level stories linked to that statistic. Just here in the United States. I mean, one of which is we already know that the Roman Catholic Church in America, which is losing members at a very rapid rate, would be in huge trouble statistically in terms of its growth or shrinkage, if not for rising numbers of Latinos. We all say, well, then all those Latinos must be Catholic. Well, you know, these two things are both, it's possible that both of these are true. That the number of Hispanics coming into America and living in America is increasing, and that's having a major impact on the Roman Catholic Church. Yet at the same time, if a lot of those Roman Catholics are leaving the Catholic Church, they're going somewhere, and a significant percentage of them are headed specifically into Pentecostal corners of American Protestantism or evangelicalism. This is happening in Latin and South America as well. It's a trend that's been going on for decades, but to some reason, I don't think the importance of this has soaked in for many journalists here in America. I was talking to a political scientist the other day, and he said that out of all of the political trends and results he has seen in the last decade or two, he is most intrigued with the future of Latino evangelical and Pentecostal Christians in America. He called them the true wild card. This, you know, everybody always talks about the Catholic vote being the swing vote in American politics as if there was only one Catholic vote. At Get Religion, we always say that there are four Catholic votes. You have the cultural, marginally name-only Catholics. You have the two or three times a year cultural Catholics. You have the perfectly normal, show up in a minivan, Sunday morning Catholic, suburban Catholic, and then you have the Catholics that a elderly priest in D.C. once called the goes to confession and sweats the details Catholics. Daily Mass Catholics, the 4 to 8% of the American Catholic Church that still goes to confession. That devout Catholic part of America has been voting for the GOP basically ever since Roe v. Wade. But now the true swing vote in American Catholicism is the ordinary Sunday morning Catholic. Well, you throw in we were talking primarily through all of that about white Catholics. You throw in Latinos. You talk about Latino Catholic voters, and then you talk about Latino Protestant evangelical voters. Let me just remind listeners of something that you and I talked about a couple months ago. I have this theory that Donald Trump is president of the United States today because he won Florida, and that he won Florida because of a larger than expected number of Republican voters in evangelical and charismatic and Pentecostal Latino churches. If you can think of anything more ironic in American politics than Donald Trump being in the White House because of the votes of Latinos, I can't think of anything more ironic than that. You and I have laughed about that in the past. But this is an example of a multi-layer trend that I think journalists are going to have to learn to focus on more and more in the future. Where will the Hispanic Protestants go politically and culturally? I don't think we can assume that they will remain Democrats the way a lot of marginal Catholic Latinos have. And if that's true, just think of the implications for that in the state of Texas. Think of, take a huge turnover in California before it would make a difference. But everybody talks about whether the state of Texas will go from being bright red, meaning Republican, to whether it will turn blue, being Democrat, or maybe at least it will be purple, which means it will be confused. But what if a lot of those Latinos turn out to be Pentecostals or Assemblies of God or Southern Baptist? Will they keep voting Democrat? I don't think we can make that assumption. So anyway, that's the kind of trend we're talking about here.
Another one that has the obvious nexus with politics is that much touted 81 or 80% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump figure. But what kind of data gets lost there if we don't go any deeper? And often the media do not go any deeper than that simple statistic.
Well, there's one that you and I have talked about before. Christianity Today had some numbers taken from polling right before the election. Now, I've never seen this in bulletproof exit polling, and I've had a conversation with the man whose name I want listeners to remember. His name is Ryan Burg, B-U-R-G-E, and he is a progressive Baptist. He grew up Southern Baptist. He's now an American or Northern Baptist pastor, but he's also a PhD in political science who teaches at Eastern Illinois. And at Get Religion, we're starting every week, we're going to run a chart by this man who goes into Pew data, he goes into general social survey data, and a bunch of other stuff, and he creates charts specifically focusing on what's happening in American religion. And I've just become intrigued with his work. He's one of those guys where we may not agree with each other on a lot of theological issues and cultural issues, but he's really brutally honest about these kinds of statistics. And he's the one, if Christianity Today had the number that said 2 or 3 weeks before the election, 40% or that X number of white evangelicals were planning on voting for Trump, but that only half of them wanted to, that the other half were reluctant Trump voters who were only voting for him because other Republicans they wanted to vote for didn't win the nomination. So half of those white evangelical Protestants who voted for Trump didn't want to. And people say, well, now they're still his most loyal supporters. Well, you have to look deeper into the numbers. First of all, how loyal are they? Second, is it still a matter that, who are the Democrats offering them in contrast to Trump? they may be sick at their stomachs about Donald Trump and a lot of things about him, but what's their alternative right now? Well, the other day, I was talking to Ryan Berg for a column that I wrote, and he said, you know, people are not focusing also on the fact that in the 2016 election, it appears that 40% of politically active white evangelicals stayed home and didn't vote at all. So if white evangelicals are rabidly in favor of Donald Trump, you would think that 40% of them wouldn't stay home, and that half of the ones who did go to the polls, that infamous 81% number, that half of that 81% was reluctant. Where would that put evangelicals going into the next election? Might that put evangelical voters on the issue of whether they would be willing to see Donald Trump impeached, or think that he might have gotten in so over his head that maybe he should resign? I don't think we can assume uniformity of mind among white evangelicals until you ask the question, what is their alternative right now? Right now, they don't have any alternative. But on an impeachment issue, their alternative is Mike Pence. I know a lot of evangelicals that if you offered them a choice between Mike Pence and Donald Trump, they're taking Pence, you know, all day and all night. I mean, so once again, different layers, the situation is actually more complex than people think it is. Getting ready for this next election, I think people need to be looking at some of these surveys. And once again, they should be looking at the religion, the Pew factor, P-E-W, and I'm not talking about the Pew Forum. I'm talking about the pews people sit in. For decades, we've talked about a pew gap between Democrats and Republicans on moral and social issues. And the evidence is that pew gap is getting bigger, not smaller, which means the importance of religion in these contests is the tension is rising in this area. The first chart that I ran by Berg at Get Religion, just as a chart, he dug back to 1988. And if you look at 1988, everyone would focus on the fact that 7.7% of the American population would say they were religiously unaffiliated, atheist, or agnostic. 7.7 in 1988. Well, that was up to 13.5 in 1998, and it was 16.7 in 2008, right about the time the studies were being done that turned into the huge explosion of content about the nuns. A recent survey, the religiously unaffiliated, no religion, spiritual but not religious crowd, was up to 23.1% of the American population. That's huge. Okay, look at the other side. Berg combined those numbers with a number about the number of people in America who were self-identifying as born again. Now, what does that mean? Apparently, there are a lot of Catholics who are now describing themselves as born again. A lot of people use the term, and maybe they're not active churchgoers, but they still call themselves born again. Okay, listen to these numbers. Same chart. 1998, 36.6% of Americans said they were born again. That's a number. I've heard George Gallup put the number lower than that, but depending on how you define the term, you know, it goes all over the place. But listen, same source. 1998, 37.5. 2008, 37.4, tiny dip. 2018, 41.4% of America identified itself as a born-again Christian believer. Now, at the same time, I've seen statistics that people who actively practice their faith are down, and George Gallup and I have talked about this for years, the late George Gallup Jr., that number is somewhere between 18%, 22%, maybe 24%. People who go to church every week or synagogue every week, Muslims who go to mosque every week, people who actively practice a faith, somewhere between 19 and 24. But still, now you've heard probably till your ears bleed, you've heard that nuns and religiously active figure, that 23.1 and rising figure all the time. But had you heard that the percentage of born-again Christians was going up?
I would never have even guessed it.
So what happened there is if you look at what you and I have called Oprah America, the mushy middle of the American spectrum, 1988, 55.7, 1998, 49%, 2008, 45.9%, 2018, 35%. So what's happening here, and how does this affect American culture? The vague, mushy middle of the spectrum is vanishing. And the implications of that are incredible. Berg has another chart he's just come out with that I'm going to probably use as next week's chart. I want to think about it a little while. He just put it up on Twitter today, and he's looked at the trend lines, and basically Jewish, steady but headed down, except for the Orthodox because their birth rate's taking them up. Other faith in America, rising slightly. Black Protestant, steady, slight decline. Evangelical, going from like 28% to like 25%, 24%. That's declining, but not going off a cliff, right? Catholic, almost identical to the evangelical line. No religion, 1980, starting at like 5%, and he has it charted to where in 2030, he's predicting the no religion factor in American life will be approaching 30%. Well, where are those people coming from? Is it coming equally out of all those groups? Well, he has the main, based on demographics, conversion rates, aging rates, death rates, he has mainline Protestantism in America going from 24% in 1980. You ready for this? He has them going to 4% of the American population in 2030. 4%. So where are the nuns coming from? Where are the religious affiliated coming from? They're coming from a lot of different places, but they're primarily coming from the generations of people who are leaving the world of liberal and mainline Protestantism, the Seven Sisters. It's a stunning chart when you look at it. And right in the middle of the chart is this bright X, and the X is formed by the rising religiously unaffiliated and this collapsing world of progressive liberal Protestantism. What does that have to do with American politics? Well, we talked about this just last week, and I wrote my column about it this week. The implications for the Democratic Party, for example, are very problematic. Listeners may have seen headlines a couple of weeks ago when the Democratic National Committee passed a resolution praising the rise of the religious unaffiliated and said that this was leading to a rise of secularism and leading to a rise in rationality in American life and science, and then noting that they shared Democratic Party values on abortion and gay rights and a host of other issues. Well, that sounds really interesting and really good, except in my column this last week, David French, the Harvard-educated lawyer who writes so much on religious liberty, French made an interesting observation. He said, stop and think about this for a second. The coalition at the heart of the Democratic Party is now going to include the single least religious cohort in all of American life in terms of the intensity of religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs and even antipathy to religious beliefs. That's the largest identifiable religious group in the Democratic Party. What's the second largest identifiable group in the Democratic Party? That, my friend, is African-American churchgoers, which is the most intensely religious segment of the American population in terms of the strength with which they hold their convictions. Can you see that somewhere down the line that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, trying to keep both of those groups in the same political party? That is, if you had Republicans who were interested in the slightest in appealing to African-American Christians. Or, I would add, how about Latino Pentecostals? Latino evangelicals. Lots to think about. But the big trend here, listeners have heard you and I talk about this before, the big trend that you can't miss is the middle is vanishing. And the extremes are getting more exaggerated. What does that do to American public life and discourse?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious and political trends in America. We've talked about the trends. What are some of the religion angles that need to be pursued in light of all these numbers? Stay tuned. If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran liberal arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of religious and political trends in America, some of which are not getting adequate coverage. Terry Mattingly is our guest, founder and editor of Get Religion. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and of the book Pop Goes Religion. Terry, what kind of story projects, big ideas, do you think that the media should pursue, journalists should pursue in light of some of these deeper numbers that you've been discussing?
Well, I don't think we're seeing nearly enough attention on religion in the Democratic Party. I think Mayor Pete Buttigieg, as an openly gay Episcopalian, his God language, I think everyone is assuming that that God language will be very popular with all Democrats. I don't think they can assume that at all of the purely secular elements of the party. The other thing, and we saw just a tiny hint buried way down in stories, that Buttigieg was not running very well with African-American voters. and in places like Maryland, that would matter. The as always, the firewall and the primary season is South Carolina and some of the big southern states. A Democrat needs, you just can't run as a Democratic candidate and win without significant percentage of Latino and African American votes in the Bible Belt states. So I think reporters are going to have to focus a lot more attention on religion among Democrats this time around. Another story that I don't think can be covered too much is this whole issue of what actually is happening to mainline Protestantism. I mean, for example, Julia Dean wrote a piece the other day at Get Religion about whatever happened to False Church and Church of the Apostles, two of the big Episcopal churches in the suburbs, the heavily Republican suburbs of Western D.C. I'd always think of it as the orange suburbs because the Orange Line Metro runs out there. Well, they lost lawsuits a number of years ago, and they're huge, expensive properties. And I believe Falls Church, if I'm correct, was meeting in a sanctuary that seated about 1,800 people and was more than filling it. Well, Falls Church lost that sanctuary. And this is a church that goes all the way back, I believe, to George Washington in that era. I mean, the city of Falls Church, Virginia, is named for Falls Church Anglican Episcopal Church. Well, the majority of that congregation lost in the courts to get to keep their property because they wanted to leave the Episcopal Church. Well, the other day, the congregation that was booted out of that gigantic property opened its a new sanctuary. And that sanctuary seats about 1,200 to 1,400 people. Where did they build it? They built it right in a section of the D.C. suburbs in Virginia that are intensely Latino, multicultural, and whatever. And that church has actually grown in the years since it was run out of its own facility and lost everything in that lawsuit. Well, the flip side of that story is, how's the remnant doing? How are the Episcopalians doing? Julia found out, I mean, of course, she used to cover those court cases when she worked for the Washington Times. Julia found out that they no longer meet in that sanctuary because there aren't enough of them to come anywhere near fill it. They meet in another smaller sanctuary, and I believe they're renting that out to what? They're renting it out to a ethnic, charismatic, or Pentecostal, or evangelical congregation. So, where am I going here? I think an interesting story would be to dig deeper into what's actually happening to the mainline Protestant churches in America. What's happening in the ELCA? One side of this is what's happening in the Missouri Synod, which is a conservative church, but with demographics that are kind of beginning to resemble the fading mainline Protestant world, which it's not a part of doctrinally. But is the Missouri Synod churches, are they culturally part of that world? Don't know. It's a great story. I can boil this down at pew level, not political level, but at the pew level of life in these churches. It's come down to this. How old is your congregation? What is the ratio of people in your congregation with gray hair to percentage of people in your church that have children? Is your church making any converts to Christianity? And is it birthing children and then holding on to them into the next generation? I'm reminded of a saying I heard long ago in Orthodoxy that it's haunting to me, and it's simply the statement is simply this: God has no grandchildren. And what the statement means is, in every generation, people either have faith or they don't. They're either in that percentage of Americans that are actively practicing and passing on a faith, or they're going to end up in the percentage of people that don't, who choose not to religiously affiliate, or who openly reject faith. What's vanishing is the Easter Christian. the Christmas Christian, the people who are sorta Baptist, sorta Catholic, sorta Lutheran. That's the mushy middle that's vanishing out of American life. And right now, boy, when I look at these charts, every single one I look at, that's what jumps out and hits me between the eyes. The middle is vanishing, and that means that in our public life, we're going to see increasing tension between active religious believers and unbelievers, or people who are spiritual but not religious, and they have rejected traditional forms of faith. Now, how many stories can you name in American life that get touched on related to this? It's the entire world of American culture, education, and politics in one trend.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
In hour two of Issues Etc., our series on the Lutheran Confessions continues. We are in the Augsburg Confession. We'll be talking about church ceremonies, civil affairs, and Christ's return to judgment. Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.